that's tuned to Yesterday, delivering shows from radio's golden years. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Some great comedy coming up in this hour. Later on, the Jack Benny Show from 1954. But right now, an anniversary or clip show on The Candid Microphone, the famed show that made a great transition to television. Hosted by Alan Funt, this episode marks their first anniversary on radio from July 1st, 1948 on ABC.
Lady, I wouldn't say that.
You might be talking into the Candid Microphone.
The Candid Microphone. Alan Funt is Candid Mike, Raymond Edward Johnson is your narrator, Joe Graham directs, and music is by Bernard Green. Candid Microphone brings you the secretly recorded conversations of all kinds of people as they react in real life to all kinds of situations. No one ever knows when he's talking into the Candid Microphone. This is the birthday of Candid Microphone, the first anniversary of a program dedicated to people and based on the belief that there is as much humor, heartthrob, and drama in everyday life as ever was captured on the stage. The selections on this anniversary program were chosen by your votes, and this is what you wanted to hear again. The perfume sales girl, as she waited on Candid Mike when he had his pockets full of Limburger cheese. The disabled veteran, one blind, the other an amputee, as they casually talked about their new lives. The moving man who was called in to move a very strange cargo. These and other secret records were your choice for this birthday program. But for anyone who has never heard this program before, we'd like to point out that no one ever knows when he's talking into the Candid Microphone.
On the 20th day of January in the year 1948, approximately 1,129,462 pairs of shoes were sold in the United States. Of these, approximately 7/10 were bought by women. On that same day in January, about 362,000 shoe clerks earned a living by bowing at the feet of lady customers. But there was one extra clerk not covered by the statistics. That was Candid Mike, posing as a shoe salesman just for that day. The lady he was waiting on tried on enough slippers to outfit a centipede. But as he waited on her, an ashtray near her dainty size 8.5AA concealed the Candid Microphone. As we eavesdrop on the scene, things are beginning to take a strange turn. Let's listen.
I've showed you about 22 shoes, and I don't think I can find anything you like.
Well, I'm sorry, huh?
Mm-hmm. You know...
There's nothing you can do for me.
No. Did you happen to see your other shoe? Well,
no, you took it off. Around here.
I don't know where the other one is.
You took it off and you put it down.
There isn't any place around here. And,
Maybe someone kept it under another chair.
No, maybe, but I'm looking. I don't see a thing of it.
Well, I'm sure that no one walked out with it.
No, I don't think so. 8AA, wouldn't. I'll go back and look for it. I might have put it back there. It just can't be found right now.
Standing here and talking to me is not finding it.
Madam, I went back there. I just went
I'm
back.
I'm glad you do. You just
I don't
you
see
just
anything
there
but boxes
there
of
right
shoes.
Back? You find my shoe.
Are you sure you came in with two shoes?
Yes, I am.
Nobody is going to take one shoe.
No, I don't think they would.
I don't want to waste any more of
I'd
your
like
time.
I'd like to see the manager.
I am the manager.
You are?
I am the manager, yes. I wait on customers sometimes, but I'm the manager.
Is there another manager in the store?
What do you mean, another manager? How many managers do you think we have around here? There's only one manager.
Well, there should be more than one with you around.
I'm trying to help.
You're not helping me by sitting there and talking to me.
I want you to go out and come back, and we'll find your shoe.
You find that shoe while I'm sitting here.
There's something in your size you can wear for a couple of hours and then come back. Can I try it on, please?
No, you take that.
Madam. You're losing your temper.
No. I've never heard of anything like that. You expect me to wear a pair of sneakers?
sneakers are not bad. A lot of people wear them.
Now, come on. Why don't you stop looking for them?
Well, sneakers are really nice. It's very comfortable, you know? You won't be one cent poorer.
There's nothing that I can do about it.
Sure there is. Wear these nice sneakers. I bet you love them. I bet you're liable to wear sneakers forever.
How can you be so? Why do you stand here and talk to me? Why don't you go look for it?
Okay. Did you say something to me now?
Yes.
What was it?
Find my shoe.
Madam, now you're losing your temper again.
Will you have a cigarette?
No, thank you.
I'll give you something.
Oh, shut up.
California's San Bernardino Valley, the grapes grow rich in the golden sun. Ruby red grapes and deep purple, destined for snowy white tables in the far corners of the land. The growers of grapes are happy and prosperous. But for one fruit store owner, the golden crop from sunny California turned out to be the grapes of wrath. For unknown to him, Candid Mike was to choose his fruit stand and his grapes for a great experiment. It was on August 15th that Candid Mike paused at this man's fruit stand for the crucial test to determine once and for all how many grapes can a customer sample before he gets tossed out on his ear. Well, let's find out now, because the noble experiment is underway.
How much are these grapes? Which grapes would you like? This kind.
This kind is what, 19 cents a pound.
19?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's pretty good.
Nice grapes.
You got any other kind?
Well, we got some red grapes.
How do you sell these red grapes?
The red grapes are the same price.
They're also 19?
19 a pound.
I like the white ones better.
Yes, and we got some also Ribiris, the blue ones.
You got blue grapes, too?
Blue grapes, sure. They're nice grapes.
Where are those? Over here?
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. Right next to it. They cost 23 cents a pound.
The blue is 26. Let me see, huh? The blue, the blue is a little better.
Yeah, but it's a nicer grape. I mean, if anyone likes it, that's a very good grape.
Hey, how much is it? 23.
23 a pound, yeah.
Well, these blue grapes are pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see you like it, huh?
Yeah, they're pretty good. How do you sell these nectarines?
Nectarines is 5 1/4.
These nectarines?
Yeah.
Nice. I don't mind if I taste one, do you?
Well, no, you keep on tasting all the grapes, but the nectarine, if it tastes one, it costs a nickel, you know?
Well, I just take a small one here.
Wait a minute. I see you like all the fruit, huh?
It's very good.
Yeah,
very
yeah,
good
stuff.
I tell you, these grapes might be just what I need. I think these blue ones are the one I like best.
Yeah, you see, you taste all the grapes already.
Well, I just had a few. Just a sample. So,
which ones would you like, please?
Well, I like the blue.
The blue.
I like the blue.
How much you want to go?
A little high, though.
I told you the price before, please. Do you want this, or maybe you want to look around before I'll wait on somebody else.
23 cents a pound is quite a bit, isn't it?
I don't know. I mean, there's cheaper ones. Why don't you take the others?
How much are they again?
19 cents.
19. Well, let me take these.
Didn't you taste it before?
Well, I forgot because I was tasting the blue.
All right.
For the money, these light grapes are maybe even better.
Well, they're all good as far as that's concerned, but I mean, that's a matter of the taste. Maybe one light.
Have you tasted these?
Oh, I like all the grapes.
Yeah.
As far as that's concerned.
These light ones, I tell you, for the money.
So what kind of you would you like, please, now?
How about tomatoes?
Tomatoes, you got them over here. Do you want any fruit now? You're talking about fruit first now.
These tomatoes are pretty hard over
well,
here.
Well, I'll pick them out for you, whichever. Oh, you're squeezing now. Now you're making stuff.
Well, but they're hard to begin with.
Well, all right, let me handle them for you, but if you keep on handling like that, you squeeze them.
Well, you squeeze them then.
Well, I don't. I know how to handle
fruit.
How can
you tell?
Well, I know how to handle fruit because I'm in that line. You know, after all, I'm in the line for many years.
Well, I can see. I mean, I'm going
to
eat them.
All right, so tell me which ones would you like and I'll give them to you.
Well, you can wait on the other people. I'll just look around here. See?
Well, you look around, but not with the mouth.
The sun rose at exactly 5 minutes past 6 on the morning of March 19th, It didn't come any too soon for 1 5-year-old boy. Now, here are some of the major events in that day of our young hero's life. Without a word of instruction, he painted a small mural with his thumb and a pencil on a corner of his bedroom wall. In an experiment with a hammer, he chipped some cement from the front porch stoop. In the afternoon, he frightened his mother by eating a small piece of cricket head. Then at 7:32 in the evening, just when all kinds of grown-up things were beginning to happen around the house, they tried to rush him off to bed and his goodnight prayers. Right now, our 5-year-old hero tries to squeeze a few extra minutes from his too short day as Mom and Pop stand at his bedside. Listen.
Mom.
Yeah?
Could these snowball and not stuff in the toy chest so my bow won't be lost?
All right, well, let's put them up here so you can play with them in the morning.
Oh.
All right, now, let's start your prayers, huh? Let's put
your... Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. And in the morning when I awake, help me the path of love to take. For Jesus' sake, amen. God bless Mom. God bless Dad. God bless Santa Claus. And God bless Grandma. And God bless
That's all, isn't it?
And God bless all train tracks. And God bless all conductors on trains. And God bless all trains.
I guess that's all, isn't it? Huh?
Yeah. And God bless Grandma, and God bless policemen for in grace.
You all for your prayers now?
And God bless all the people in the park. And God bless all the girls who shovel.
All the girls who shovel?
Yeah.
I guess that's all, isn't it? Huh?
No.
Yeah. Shall we say goodnight now?
Good night. And God bless you.
You all for your prayers now?
And God bless the milkman. That's all. Amen.
Couple of footnotes that helped to make this a happy Candid Microphone anniversary. Candid Mike would like to thank the thousands of you who helped select tonight's program. And if you've ever wondered how Candid Mike does it all, you'll be able to see and hear for yourself in the movies. The first movie starring Candid Mike opens next Thursday at the Criterion Theater in New York. Look for it soon in your city. But don't bother looking for Candid Mike himself, because you can always be sure that no one ever knows when he's talking into the Candid microphone. December 9th is a day that will be long remembered by a certain moving man. Not because in France the steamship Europa sank in a heavy storm, and not because in Egypt King Farouk appointed a new premier, no. Our friend, the moving man, remembers December 9th because on that day, this man who has moved odds and ends all his life almost moved the oddest of them all. Everything was quite normal up to the time, about 2 minutes past noon, when this moving man arrived at an office to call for a trunk on a routine pickup and delivery. But he didn't know that inside the trunk was a man from the staff of Candid Microphone ready to let out a blood-curdling moan every time the mover made a move. All is quiet, though, as our friend the mover walks into the office. But let's find out what happened that day.
You have to say where this trunk comes from?
No.
When you deliver it?
No, you don't have to. When you don't want, I don't have to.
And how much will it cost? It goes to East 90th.
What is it, a carry up there? You got an elevator there?
There's an elevator.
$12.
$12 for the whole thing?
Yeah.
All right. But now listen.
What?
You have to be very, very careful with the trunk and under no circumstances open it.
No. Why should we open it?
Well, all right, but don't open it at all.
We're not interested in what's inside.
Good. All right. Be a little careful with it now.
Okay. Put it out in.
Just be very gentle with it, will you?
Oh. What is it?
Never mind. Just take it.
Well, if it makes that noise, I want to know.
No, that's nothing. Just forget about that. Come on, hurry up. We've been trying to get rid of this thing since last night.
But what is it? I don't know what it is.
Never mind. Deliver it to 180.
Give us a slip.
What do you mean a slip?
I want to have a signature that I delivered there. I want to have a signature signed for that.
Make out a slip for the man.
Why, can't you tell us what it is?
No, it's none of your business what's in
the trunk. Yeah, but it makes that kind of noise.
What's the matter? I don't hear anything.
Why does it make that noise? I don't know.
There's no noise. You don't hear anything.
What do you mean I don't hear anything?
What's the matter?
I don't know.
Come on, Carl. We've been waiting since last night. Let's get this thing out of here.
Gives me the creeps to handle it, but I don't know what it is.
Oh, come on. Don't be silly. You've moved all kinds of things.
Yeah. Why don't you want to tell me what it is?
Never mind what it is. I don't... Do you ask everybody what's in a trunk?
Who's paying for it?
We are. Come on, William. We've got to get some work done here.
All right, pay for delivery.
All right. Get the money. How much will it be? Is it $12?
Yeah, I don't know.
Here's $20. You can keep the change.
They sure you they're going to take it?
They'll take it. Don't answer any questions about it or anything else.
It really gives you the creeps.
Why does it give you the creeps?
Because it makes that kind of
noise. Oh, never mind. That's nonsense.
Nonsense. All right. But when he doesn't want to take it,
he'll leave it. Just leave it and go.
Leave it and go.
That's all.
Lock it.
It is clasped from both sides.
Listen, if the guy doesn't want to take it, you know what he'll do? He could take a cop and...
Never mind a cop. That's none of your business what's in there. It's none of his business. You're delivering a truck. You got orders from us. Come on, the locks are securely fastened.
Well, that will open, too.
No, it won't open. What are you, a little boy or something? You scared?
I'm not afraid of that. I don't know what. I don't care about it, but...
How are you? Got a truck downstairs?
Yeah. You want to ride with us?
Do I want to ride with you? No.
It's going to make a lot of noise. It's going to make noise.
Did you open it to me?
No, like this.
It might. I don't hear much, though.
Here's your $20, and I don't want to move you and look for another truckman.
The 12th day of May, 1948, was a Wednesday. 4 years and 4 days had passed since peace was declared in Europe. On that same day, two men sat in the waiting room of a small office, chatting quietly. Neither wore his army discharge pin, but one was an amputee and the other was blind.
When I first got blind, I used to live in trust for myself out. No, not by myself, but after I got blind a while, I got so I'd go anywhere with a cane just as big as I would with a dog. Tell me, what do you do for entertainment now?
Oh, well, in the summer I either go fishing, sometimes go to baseball games, movies, and then you go to dance every once in a while.
How did it come about, the accident?
Gunflash, yeah. Too close to the flash, and it had on no dark glasses, so... That's not CI, it's right out.
Now, what type of weapon was that?
It was a 90 millimeter.
Oh, 90 millimeter.
A
Were you married before you went into service?
No, no, I got married after I come up.
That's the question everybody asks me, too. I don't know why they ask that. I guess they want to know if we were married after we become disabled or before.
Oh, yes. A lot of people ask me, my wife, I was going with my wife before I went into service. No, I never seen my wife. Never seen her.
Yeah, I don't know. They ask me that question, too. So they, I don't know. I guess they're waiting to see if a one-legged man is capable of getting married or if a blind man is capable
that's
of
true.
Getting married. I think that's what they're looking for.
A lot of them don't think you are capable of doing these things, but you can do them.
Yeah, they ask you that question. I very seldom ever, I just accepted the fact that when I lost it, that's all there was to it. I'm a one-legged man, that's all there is to it. But every once in a while, I'll get a longing for the leg, like when I'm walking upstairs, mostly. It seems that at that time is when I miss my leg the most. And I was wondering what comes up with you that's similar to going upstairs.
In a strange building.
In a strange building.
That's right. That's the only difficulty that I have. In a strange building. And I do like to see the expression on some people's face in the subway when I take the dog in. I would like to see that. You can hear them whispering all over the car, but you can't hear what they say.
What I have happened to me most, back to pension, is I get a kick out of the kids, They'll see me, and the first thing you know, they'll be telling Mommy that there's a man with a broken leg, and the mothers will be coming, usually they become embarrassed and they start shushing them, which makes the matters only worse.
That's right.
Their mothers, they get real flustered up, and they, don't say that, and if they just let it roll off the, the matter would pass over, they try to shush up the child, why they make it all the more noisy.
When I had a great laugh, I was going uptown the other day, and about 7 or 8 little kids standing on the sidewalk. So I guess they all know me. They see me a lot around there. And they started singing a song. Here comes the blind man leading the blind dog, and I like to roll. Just had a little song going, about that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I don't mean nothing by it. I mean I try to stop and explain to them.
Next
time they're not so nosy and they wouldn't maybe embarrass somebody else who don't feel the way you do about it.
I'd rather have a kid to do that to me than to have a grown up to do it. I mean, several times on the subway, me and my wife sitting side by side, and somebody is standing up and whisper to my wife, "Is he blind?"
Yeah.
Stuff like that, And that gets you all backward or something.
Yeah, it's obvious that the man is blind, but I don't know. That's some people, and we just got to put up with them.
Oh yes, you got to put up with them.
The morning of January 15th was cold and dreary in mid-Manhattan as an alarm clock pierced the slumber of a certain Miss W. She had an hour to get to her job behind the perfume counter of a department store. Little did Miss W. know that at exactly 11:30 a.m. of this day, she was to keep a date with fate. That's when Candid Mike turned up on the customer's side of her perfume counter, and he was an ill wind that blew her no good. She didn't know that the bandages on his hand concealed the Candid microphone, nor that this man who came to buy some rare and magic perfume had his pockets stuffed with Limburger cheese. As the microphone and the Limburger cheese both begin their work, this is what we hear.
I want to get something for a woman about 35. She's not very pretty. She's a little on the ugly side, actually. What can you recommend?
Well, her age isn't the only thing that's important. What is her coloring?
She's dark-haired. She has a sort of dark complexion.
For a woman of her age and appearance, I would recommend Worth Jurevien.
Jurevien?
Yes.
How much is that?
That's $3.50 the half ounce. It's not an expensive perfume, yet it's appropriate for night or daytime wear.
Mm-hmm.
And for practically any age at all.
Mm-hmm.
Do you smell anything peculiar?
It's a perfume, maybe?
No, some other odor.
No, I don't.
I think this would be very nice for her. It's not too heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have all the good lines right here, but if you want me to recommend something, that's the one.
Yeah. What about these others? How are they?
Well, these are mostly heavy, musky odors.
Yeah.
They're more for the exotic type. I still smell something funny. Is it your cigarette?
I don't smell a thing.
You sure?
Maybe it's one of the perfumes.
Oh, no. No perfume would smell like that.
This one smells very sweet to me. Very
yes,
beautiful.
That's lovely. It's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Very popular, too.
How about these? What's that?
Well, these would be for a younger person.
What are they, flower smells?
Well, they're not floral, but they are between the musky and the very light. And I wouldn't recommend those for her. There's still a funny odor around here.
I wish you wouldn't keep talking about that.
I know, but it's really getting me.
It doesn't help me, sir.
Oh, I appreciate that, and I don't mean to bring it to your attention, but I'm so aware of it.
I like that name of Cobra. It seems to fit this woman pretty well.
Well, I don't think it would. Of course, it's entirely up to you.
Mm-hmm.
You sure you don't smell anything?
If you keep mentioning that, ma'am, I'll just have to buy the perfume someplace
else.
I'm
sorry, but it's a little overpowering.
It must be one of these odors.
Oh, it couldn't possibly be perfume. It's something I can't identify.
Well, it's not me.
Don't smell the perfumes, because it isn't that.
Something behind the counter?
Oh, no. No, this just came very suddenly. I didn't notice it until a few minutes ago when you came in.
Now, you shouldn't say that.
Well, don't take it personally. I don't mean
it. Well, how else can I take it if you tell us there's this funny odor?
Well, don't you smell anything at all?
I don't smell a thing. This Cobra has a strong smell.
Oh, yes. That's a... funny, isn't it? Never smelled that way before. Would you like to decide on the jury of here?
$350, huh?
Mm-hmm. There is a very peculiar odor.
I wish you wouldn't say that anymore. Please, ma'am.
I'm
You're
very
making me
sorry,
feel self-conscious about it.
Well, I don't mean to.
Well, what else can I say? You say it happened since I came here.
Take a deep breath.
What?
You sure you don't have a cold?
No, I don't have a cold.
It isn't the store, because it never smelled that way before. I've never smelled anything quite like this.
I can't make up my mind about them yet.
Or would you like to decide on the Jeu Rivière, or can I get someone else to wait on you?
What's that?
Or could I get someone else to wait on you?
Why?
Well, I'll have to take care of something up in the office.
So, until next week, the candid microphone goes back into hiding, the better to catch you in our act. Nothing is off the record when the man with the hidden mic crosses your path, with a microphone that hears without being seen, the candid microphone. The candid microphone is tailored for your enjoyment, so we're always glad to hear your comments about it. If there's someone you'd like to hear us catch off guard, tell it to Candid Mike. Write to Candid Microphone, in care of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, Los Angeles, USA.
The Candid Microphone, on Tuned 2 yesterday from July 1st, 1948 on ABC. You're listening to an hour of comedy on Tuned 2 yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Up next, The Jack Benny Show with special guest George Jessel. This 1954 broadcast, a far cry from their start in entertainment on the vaudeville circuit, working alongside acts like Al Jolson and Burns and Allen. At that time, they were performing a mix of their own material and some paid jokes. In this episode of The Benny Show, the writers apparently thought that a skit with George and Jack about 3 years earlier was funny enough to bring back as part of the script from a program of November of 1951. This next episode heard on CBS on February 28, 1954.
Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Rochester, Dennis Day, Bob Crosby, the Cornettes, and yours truly, Don Wilson. ladies and gentlemen, right now, we're doing a radio show from the Lincoln Square Theater. We can't bring you Lincoln, but here's a real square, Jack Benny!
Thank you. Hello again, this is Jack Benny talking, and Don, that was such a wonderful introduction you gave me. It's a shame it's your last one.
What do you mean, my last one?
Well, Don, this show is transcribed, and the program and you will be released at the same time.
But, Jack...
Look, Don, I'm only kidding. It's just that I wanted a more dignified introduction because the program tonight is dedicated to the Red Cross campaign.
Oh, say, Jack, did you read that last week President Eisenhower played golf at the club you belong to in Palm Springs, Tamarisk?
Yes, Don. And what a thrill I got when I read that. Just imagine. The President of the United States driving off from the same tee that I drove off. Putting on the same green that I putted on. Tipping the same caddy that called me a cheapskate. What a thrill.
You know, Jack, when the president plays golf, he's accompanied by 20 Secret Service men.
20 Secret Service men? Mm-hmm. Gosh, I'll bet he never loses the ball. You know, FBI means find ball instantly. But anyway, Don, it's exciting being here in New York again, isn't it?
It certainly is, Jack. And have you noticed all the changes since we were here last?
You bet I have, Don. They've painted the sub-treasury building. Brinks has four new trucks. And there's a brand new carpet in the Chase National Bank. Anyway, Don, excuse me, Don. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny. This is Rochester.
Rochester, where are you?
I'm backstage at the television studio.
Oh, how's everything going?
Fine. I've been watching Miss Hayes rehearse on the set.
Oh, yes, Helen Hayes. I'm sure lucky to get her as a guest star. She's some actress, isn't she, Rochester?
Yeah, and boss, you should have seen her this afternoon. In 1 minute, she went from a mood of carefree, lighthearted gaiety to the pent-up emotions of anger, frustration, and despair.
Gee, what scene was that?
No scene. She was reading a contract.
Rochester, she's probably nervous. Everybody gets excited before a live television show.
On the contrary, boss. Everyone's very calm here. Your producer is taking a nap, the director is reading a magazine, and the writers are playing cards. In fact, we've had only one attack of nerves all afternoon.
Really? Who had it?
Your makeup man.
My makeup man? But Rochester, this makeup man in New York has never worked on me before. He's never even seen me. Did you describe me to him? Did you tell him that I'm only 39 years old?
I even went further than that. I told him you had skin like a peach.
Well, good. What did he say?
He asked me if I'd ever seen the skin on a 39-year-old peach.
Talk to you later. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Oh, say, boss.
Now what?
I was just wondering if I could have tomorrow off.
Tomorrow? But, Rochester, just last week you had 3 days off.
Oh, boss, you're not going to count them, are you?
Why not?
We were on the train.
Well, you had nothing to do.
Nothing. Every time we came to a stop, you threw a white coat on my back, shoved a whisk broom in my hand, and we split the tips.
All right, you can have tomorrow off. I'll see you later. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Was that Rochester?
What did you say, Don?
I say, was that Rochester?
If it wasn't, I've been talking to a giraffe with a sore throat. I'm an ad-libbing fool, you know? Except I got it written in pencil. And I didn't tell anybody. Don, Rochester's over at the television studio watching a rehearsal.
Oh, Jack, how did you manage to get such a wonderful actress like Helen Hayes to appear on your television show?
Well, Don, I heard that she was very anxious to appear on an outstanding comedy program, so I went up to her apartment and asked her to be on my show, and she accepted immediately.
Well, that's amazing.
I will admit, of course, I used a little trick.
What did you do?
I had my leg in a cast. She thought I was Jackie Gleason. You know, Don, sometimes you have to be very clever about how... See who that is, will you, Don?
Sure, Jack.
Can we speak to Mr. Benny?
Say, Jack, it's a fella and four girls. They want to talk to you.
To me?
Mr. Benny, my name is Rogers and Hammerstein.
Rogers and Hammerstein?
No, Rogers and Hammerstein. The N stands for Nathan.
Oh. When you told me who you were, I was amazed. You know, you have a very famous name.
Yeah, I know. Nathan sells hot dogs in Coney Island.
Look, Mr. Hammerstein.
Just call me Nate.
Well, what can I do for you, Nate?
Well, myself and these four girls here are members of the Jack Benny fan club. I'm the president.
Well, how long have you people been my fans?
Mr. Benny, we realized you was our kind of guy when we first saw you at the Palace Theater.
Gosh, when was that?
Yesterday evening when you was arguing with a cashier about changing the prices.
Oh, were you there?
All the time, till the cops broke it up.
Well, look, it's very nice of you to come over, but right now I'm doing a radio show.
Yeah, that's why we came over. The girls want to welcome you to New York.
Welcome me?
Yeah, take it, girls.
Hello, hello, hello,
hello, hello, hello.
Good girls, very good. And Mr. Hammerstein.
Just call me Nate.
Well, Nate, I want you to know that I appreciate your bringing the girls over to sing to me. But tell me, what was that boing at the end?
One of their girdles broke.
Hey, Jack, I meant to tell you about the trick I played on Lois this morning. You see, I...
Excuse me. Come in. Hi, Jack. Well, Georgie Jessel. What are you doing here?
I'm looking for a kangaroo with a sore throat.
Oh, yes.
No, I tell you why I'm here, Jack. I get one in every once in a while. Jack, I'm ashamed of myself. You know, you were good enough to emcee the testimonial dinner that the Friars gave me the other night, and I didn't even get a chance to talk to you.
That's all right, Georgie. You were busy.
Well, I didn't feel right about it, so I thought I'd come over and say hello.
Well, thanks, Georgie. That's nice of you.
And as long as I'm here... I'd like to make this an occasion for welcoming you to this great and thriving metropolis.
Georgie, no speeches now.
I just got a few notes.
Oh.
Yes, my good people. Faith, hope, and charity, without which we would all be striving without point or purpose.
George, I'm doing a program.
And on behalf of the 8 million residents of this community, we welcome you, Jack Benny, to the great city of New York.
Is that all?
No, I'd like a glass of water now.
I've never seen such a guy. When other people meet, they shake hands. He delivers an address.
I'm sorry, Jack.
That's all right. By the way, Georgia, this is my announcer, Don Wilson.
Yes, of course. You know, Don, I've seen you at so many of the dinners in which I've been the Toastmaster.
Oh, you have?
Yeah, and if you'd look up from your plate once in a while, you'd see me, too.
Say, George, I hear Jack made a very good MC at the dinner the Friars gave you.
Darren, Jack was just wonderful. He said so many nice things about me.
Oh, he did?
Yes, he did. His speech was so beautiful. He paid me such flowing compliments, I sat there thinking, either he's lying or I'm dead.
George, I could have paid you a lot more compliments, many more. In fact, I had so much material left over that I plan to do a sketch tonight based on your life.
Oh, no. This is your show, and the Friars have already honored me, so let's do a sketch that I've written about your life.
But I'd rather do your life.
No, no. This is a half-hour program, and the way I've lived, you'd never get mine in, believe me.
Well, if that's the way you feel, go ahead, let's hear it. Now, this is a story about my life.
Your life. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, the Jack Benny story. Oh, you can't take it with you because he owns it.
And music.
Our story begins with the birth of Jack Benny in the year 1894, 39 years ago. It happened in the little town of Waukegan, Illinois. The proud parents gazed with delight on the blue-eyed baby. And it was at this moment that Jack Benny's voice was heard for the first time.
Look at him, Papa. He's so cute.
Yes, we'll call him Jackie.
Doctor, I want to ask you something. Oh, I know all parents think their children are unusual. But honestly, Doctor, isn't our Jackie different from most babies you've delivered?
I can't tell. I'm also a veterinarian.
Look at little Jackie, Papa. He's got your mouth.
And he's got your nose.
And he's got your eyes.
And he's got your ears.
But look at his hair.
That's mine. It slipped off.
Quiet now.
Now, Mr. Benny, about my fee.
Oh, don't worry, Doctor. Just mail your bill and my son Jackie will send you a check.
Oh, thank you very... Well, now, wait a minute. Your son here, Jackie, he's only a few minutes old. How can he send me a check?
Well, I don't know how he did it, but he's already saved $800.
And so the little baby began to grow and make rapid progress. At the age of 6 months, he astounded medical science because he had 32 teeth. All of them. But Jack was a happy little child, and all day long, he used to sit in his crib playing with his toys. And as he grew older, his parents gave him everything he wanted. But Jack wasn't an only child. He had a younger sister named Florence. Today has an older sister named Florence. But the years passed, and finally Jackie entered school. And as a student, he was exceptionally bright, in particular in arithmetic.
And now for the next question, I will call on Jackie Benny.
Yes, teacher.
Now, Jackie, if you loan $10 to Albert and $5 to Irving and $15 to Tommy, and they all paid you back at once, how much money would you have?
$31.
I'm sorry, Jackie, but the correct answer is only $30.
What about the interest?
Oh, yes, I forgot. And that reminds me, Jackie, I'll pay you the money I owe you Friday.
Good. Good. Then I'll give you back your wristwatch.
It was easy to see that there was something about Jackie that was different from other boys. In his class, there was one little boy who lived near the stockyard. There was another whose home was above a livery stable. And still another who lived next door to a glue factory. Yet Jackie was the only kid in his class called Stinky. Somehow he seemed to know that he was destined for a musical career. And for the next 2 years, he took violin lessons regularly.
No, no, no. How many times must I tell you smoothly, smoothly?
I'm sorry.
Play it again. Only this time hold the bow with one hand. You are not Ty Cobb. Not today. The lesson she is over.
Oh, well, goodbye, Professor.
Wait, you did not pay me.
Huh?
Monsieur Benny, I want my money.
But Jack was persistent about his violin playing, and he took lessons year...
Monsieur Benny, my money.
After year...
Monsieur Benny, my money.
After year...
Please, Monsieur Benny, my money.
Finally came the day of his graduation from elementary school. It was a proud moment for Jack and his parents. But that was the day that he put on his first pair of long pants. He looked kind of bulky over his diaper. As he was preparing to leave the house, his parents looked at him proudly and they said,
Jackie, we're proud of you.
Thanks, Mother. I'm so excited.
Look at him, Mama. Doesn't he look handsome?
He should look handsome. He's got your mouth.
And he's got your nose.
And he's got your eyes.
And he's still got my hair.
You'll get it. You'll get it. Let him graduate first. And we want to get there early. He's going to play a violin solo.
Teachers and fellow graduates, your kind reception to my musical offering has filled my little heart with joy. But I don't deserve all this applause alone. Some of the glory must be shared by my music teacher. That wonderful man, that brilliant genius, that great...
Never mind the compliments. I want my money.
Jack Benny's schooling and violin study were interrupted by World War I when he entered the armed forces. He was really too young to go, but his father was on the draft board. Early in 1917, we find Jack no longer a boy, but a man, ready to enter the Navy.
Goodbye, Papa.
Go already.
With the war over, Jack's parents knew he'd soon be home, and they made preparation. They moved. So, Jack decided on vaudeville as a career. It was about this time that many changes took place in the entertainment world. New innovations had come along, radio, talking pictures. And in one picture called Lucky Boy, a handsome young leading man named Georgie Jessel scored an immediate smash hit as he sang, One bright and guiding light that taught me wrong from right I found in my mother's
Georgie, look at this.
Those baby tales she told, that road old pay was
Georgie. Old. Look, it's me. It's my life story.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. With the advent of radio, many stars were made overnight. One of the brightest was the man who always opened his show with,
Hello again.
From this, he became a star. When Jack realized that he was a visitor on radio, he decided to get his own program, and first he looked for an announcer. He didn't have to look far because Don Wilson was everywhere.
So you want to be a radio announcer, eh?
Yes, sir.
Have you had any experience?
A little.
Well, before I hire you, I'd like to audition you.
Yes, sir.
So Don Wilson was hired. But gradually, Jack assembled his cast. He took Mary out of the stocking counter at the May Company. He reclaimed Phil Harris from a Bowery mission. But he had a hard time getting Dennis Day. The old grinder didn't want to part with him. Success in radio, Jack decided to go into motion pictures. And one night, he happened to be at a gay party where every big producer in Hollywood was present. And feeling that this was his opportunity, Jack approached Mr. Warner, the head of the Warner Brothers studio.
Mr. Warner, I realize it's not considered proper to mix business with pleasure. But there's no reason why I can't be a big success in the movie. And I feel that if you and I put our heads together, we can come up with a role that will not only suit my particular talent, but we'll also...
Never mind. Just park my car.
Yes, sir.
So Jack parked Mr. Warner's Cadillac. But he persisted and finally made a number of pictures for Warner Brothers. Climax by the horn blows at midnight. It was exactly 1 month after this picture was released that Jack met Mr. Warner at another party.
But Mr. Warner, there's no sense being mad at me. When you're a producer, you got to take chances. And I feel that if you and I...
Never mind. Just park my Chevrolet. But although he ruined others, Jack continued to do well. And so he decided to move into a new house in Beverly Hills with his faithful valet, Rochester.
Boss, this house is sure beautiful.
Yes, it is, Rochester. But, you know, I've been thinking.
About what?
Well, a house isn't really a home without a woman.
Want me to get married?
Never mind.
And so Jack moved into the home which he still resides at. Ladies and gentlemen, this brings us up to the present. And old Jack Benny has won the respect of his colleagues, the acclaim of the public, and every award that he could possibly achieve. He's still the same man that he was when he started out. And knowing Jack as well as I do, I know that his greatest thrill came one day, 3 years ago, in a simple little presentation that the public doesn't even know about.
And so, Mr. Benny, from our government in Washington, it's my pleasure to give you this.
Gee, a $37 tax refund.
Ladies and gentlemen, on this happy note, we end our story. Well, Jack, that's it.
Georgie, I think you did a wonderful job in presenting my life story, and I want to thank you.
Well, Jack, you deserve it.
Thanks, Georgie. And tonight, maybe the two of us.
You deserve it because you've always had an abundance of those three great qualities, faith, hope, and charity.
Georgie, don't get started
again. Ladies and gentlemen, if I could have but your...
Georgie, don't start it
for the next
please.
30 minutes.
Look, George, I don't want speeches. The half hour is nearly over now.
We must get down to fundamentals.
Georgie, please.
On the ebb and the flow of man's
George,
existence.
Don't spoil everything.
It
you did my life.
And the substance is all of which, nothing else. The rest
but
is...
But, Georgie,
so
look at Georgie, this was my life. You're spoiling the whole thing.
Let
oh,
me
for heaven's
sake. Let me talk.
The Jack Benny Show on Tuned to Yesterday from February 28, 1954, a CBS broadcast. Wrapping up this hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday, be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. It's been a pleasure.